Hi, Jim Christina from the Writer's Block. You know, there's a dark holiday season ahead for some children and families in need this season. So as you plan limited holiday parties or just give thoughts to the needs of some, how about you think about canned or non-perishable foodstuffs, or an inexpensive toy taken to your local Toys for Tots center, or maybe take the food to the nearest food bank or food distribution center. You can find both locations online in your city. And you would be making a lot of folks' holidays a lot better knowing they could feed their kids and themselves, and possibly give their kids a small gift or two. So how about you give what you can? And now, please settle in for a brand new episode of The Writer's Block, and happy holidays from all of us at The Writer's Block and from LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Happy holidays to everyone out there from LA Talk Radio and, of course, the Writer's Block, because it is Thursday. I am Jim Christina, and I'm your host of the Writer's Block, and we are on the air right now to the world, and I have with me on the line Bobby Jean Bell, my wonderful co-host that has been for 5.5 years, right from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here tonight.
I'm good. Good.
I'm still sitting on the edge of my seat, Jim. I can't wait to get into tonight's conversation.
That just begs to be had. Begs to be had. And we have tonight with us, of course, it's the first Thursday in December, which means that we have with us our good friend, Henry Park. Hello, Henry.
Hello, Jim. Hello, Bobby Jean. Great to be with you guys again.
And Henry, just let me be the first to say Merry Christmas.
Well, thank you, and Merry Christmas to you and to Bobby. And with Christmas just around the corner, we've all got a Christmas present coming to us courtesy of Universal Pictures.
We do.
Yes, we do.
And it would be, that's right. Talk to us, Henry. Talk to us.
You bet. It's a new big-budget Western called News of the World. I know it doesn't sound like a Western. It sounds like that strange tabloid newspaper, but that's what it's called. It's starring Tom Hanks. He plays a Civil War veteran, Captain Jefferson Kyle Kidd, who now makes his living by traveling the country, giving talks about current events from newspaper stories. He meets up with a little girl, Joanna, an escaped 6-year captive of Indians, and is determined to take her back to her family. Now, the actress who plays her, Helena Zengel, is unknown in the U.S., but she's a big star in Europe, and in April became the youngest actress to win the Best Actress Lola, the German equivalent of the Oscar. The director, Paul Greengrass, also directed Captain Phillips with Hanks, directed United 93 and 3 of the Jason Bourne films, and It opens on Christmas Day.
Well,
so that's something to look forward to.
I am definitely looking forward to it, because you know me, Henry, I love a good Western.
Mm-hmm. I seem to recall that. And the trailer looks really good.
Yeah, the trailer is powerful.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, the last few years have been a tough time for Western movie ranches. The Sand Fire of 2016 destroyed the Sable movie ranch. The Woolsey Fire of November 2018 burned Agora's famous Paramount Ranch to the ground. Now, they're working on rebuilding Paramount Ranch, but as you can imagine, with all the restrictions that COVID brings and all the other problems, it's a slow process. And now Old Tucson, which was built for in 1940 for William Holden's Western Arizona,
right,
which functions as both a studio and an amusement park, that's been closed since March because of COVID. And in September, they announced that it'll remain closed indefinitely and that Pima County has assumed responsibility for it. The locals are worried that it might become some kind of a housing development or something. Now, here in L.A., of course, We've seen the backlot of 20th Century Fox become Century City, and Warner Brothers Ranch became Warner Center. So it's something to worry about. But there is some very good news on the Western location front. In Montana, near Chico Hot Springs, three friends have built a huge, beautiful new Western movie ranch. It's called Yellowstone Film Ranch. And it looks like the first Western to be shot there may be a picture called Rust. It'll star Alec Baldwin as an aging outlaw who takes his 13-year-old grandson on the run when the boy is sentenced to hang for an accidental killing. The writer-director, Joel Souza, directed another Western in 2010, Hannah's Gold, starring the late and very talented Luke Perry. Now, has anybody seen Ron Howard's new film, Hillbilly Elegy, yet?
No.
Sorry to say, I haven't caught it yet. It is on Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a lot of talk about Amy Adams and Glenn Close in it. But what
Yes, I did see it. I'm sorry. I did see it. I watched it last weekend, as a matter of fact.
Oh, cool. Well, how is it?
It's different. It looks different.
It looks different,
It's very different. They did, Ron went all out in getting all the characters to look like the real people.
Very good. I know Glenn Close, I would never have known it was her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. I mean, you can't even hardly tell. But until she opens her mouth, and then, of course, it's Glenn Close. But still, the movie itself is a little slow in spots. But as far as a good, solid story, it is. It's a pretty good story.
Right. Well, I know that Ron Howard talked Bo Hopkins, his former American Graffiti co-star, into coming out of retirement to play the grandpa.
He did.
And Bo told, he is very proud of his work in it. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
He should be. He's only in about a half an hour of the movie, but it's really a good half an hour. So,
well, great. Oh, now for all you rodeo fans, the National Finals Rodeo starts tonight on RFD TV. I think it is all tonight, but it's repeat for anyone who wants to see it on RFD TV and the Cowboy Channel. Oh, and please check out the December True West magazine with my article on the 50th anniversary of the making of Monty Walsh, with Lee Marvin, Jack Palance, and Jean Moreau in her only American film.
What a great movie.
Yeah, and you can read all about this and so much more at www.henryswesternroundup.blogspot.com.
Thank you, Henry. We'll be talking to you the first part of January.
I can't wait. Happy holidies, guys.
And happy New Year.
Yeah, happy New Year.
Have a fun month.
You too. Take care, guys.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Bobby, tonight's guest, I swear, is the author of popular thriller, apocalyptic horror, sci-fi fantasy fiction, in hundreds of reviews. His novels have been praised for their strong characters, action, and gritty realism. Each book promises an exciting experience with people you care about in a world that feels real. These works have been nominated for major literary awards, such as, well, of course, the major award of course, is the leg with the lampshade. You have one of those. As a Bram Stoker Award.
Yes, I do.
I do. And the Audio Award, and translated into multiple languages, an option for film. He is a member of the HWA, International Thriller Writers, and IFWA. Would you please welcome to the writer's block, without any further ado, Mr. Craig DeLuey.
Hey, Jim.
Hello.
Hey, Bobby Dean. Oh, I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are. I have to say, this book, I told you the other night, once I started reading it, it was really hard to stop. We get so many books, and what the deal with this show is, Craig, whether I told you or not, is that we have to, Bobby and I, or Russ and I, whoever is the host that night, we have to read the book. That's part of the deal. We can't talk about the book unless we read it. So, I've only missed a few. Bobby's only missed a few. But for the most part, we read your stories and we talk about them a little bit before we get into your other stuff. This book, it puts you into a whole different level of crazy. I have seen lots and lots of programs about cults. I know two people that were in cults and finally got themselves back out. nothing like this. This goes to a level that is beyond even my sick mind. And I have a pretty sick mind, actually.
Well, I would take that as a compliment.
You can take all of my friend, one, Bobby Jean Bell. I do have a sick mind. But the ending of this book, as we discussed the other night, there could have been no other ending. It rose to this ending. It rose to this occasion to end the book this way. And I congratulate you. What a wonderful story. So,
thank you.
Oh my God, no, thank you. You gave us all nightmares for a week. So
you're welcome.
The name of the book, Children.
If you tell a horror author, he gave you nightmares. That's what he says.
It is.
Oh, yeah. The light is on at night, too. You can't go to bed and you got to have the light on.
The name of the book is The Children of Red Peak, and it takes place in both current and 15 years hence. And it chronicles five lives of children who were children of these people who went with this cult. And they escaped, and it chronicles their lives from there forward. I won't go into it much more because there's a whole lot of spoiler alerts you can talk about in this book. And I really don't want to talk about any of them because I don't want to ruin the story for people who want to read this story. It is phenomenal. Suffice to say that these children all, without question and without regard to sex, male or female, they all have problems, every single one of them. And it's just amazing following their story. And the name of the book is The Children of Red Peak. And Craig, if you wouldn't mind, give us a little synopsis of the story.
Sure. So it's about a group of people. They grew up in this, it doesn't start out as a cult. It's more an insular, isolated, very religious group. And they're waiting for the end of the world in the wilderness. And even though it's very strict, it's not so bad. They have a very strict upbringing, but they feel safe and loved. And as children, they accept all of the beliefs that their parents have, and they're relatively happy. But then the reverend goes on a trip, and he comes back, and he says, God's waiting for us at a mountain. He's going to take us to heaven, and we're going to have to pass some tests first when we get there.
Right.
And that's when things get really dark.
Yes.
And so so the story's in two timelines. One is where we see these people as children and they're in this group and the group ends up going to Red Peak and it's there that things start getting really dark. And we see how logically this relatively happy religious community becomes a horrific cult.
Yeah.
Then the other story timeline is where we see the survivors of the horrific last days of this group when they implode. Now it's years later, and these children are now adults, and they're living with the trauma of what they experienced. And so they're all severely flawed and dealing with, because they're dealing with, you know, some pretty heavy trauma of what they experienced as children. And they, when one of them commits suicide, the others come together and they, they're forced to confront their past and then return to Red Peak to gain some type of closure.
Sure. And that's actually what grabbed me right off the bat was the book starts at the funeral. And it really does. Your writing is so vivid that you can feel them and you can feel the pain they're going through. You know they're going through pain internally because none of them wants to talk about it.
Right.
But internally they're dying inside. They're just dying inside.
A lot of trauma survivors. They're fine, like as long as their flaws are actually coping mechanisms.
Sure.
So as long as they're coping with the trauma, they accept the flaws that they have and they live with them.
Sure, sure. And you throw a lot of psychology into this book.
Yeah.
And because one of the survivors is a psychologist and the other one deals with getting kids, talking kids out of believing in the cults and leaving the cults.
Right. So he's a cult exit counselor.
David and Beth. Right. Right. And the other crew, Deacon and Emily and Angela. Angela is David's sister. She's a cop in Las Vegas.
Right.
which I can relate to because I have a kid that's a cop in Las Vegas. So that kind of like sunk home. But so those are the five they got out, and now there's four. And there's three together because the fourth from Las Vegas doesn't want to come out. So, but what a wonderful story. It's just it just grabs you from the start. It doesn't let you go. It just keeps piling more and more crap on you. And by the time you're actually finished with the book and turn the last page, you go, holy crap, what did I just read? It's just amazing. And Craig, I'm sure you felt that when you finished writing it. What did I just write? You know, what?
Yeah, it's supposed to be cathartic for the reader. It was certainly that way for me as the writer.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. You have other books that you've written. I mean, a lot of in the same genre, in the same vein, but then you also do historic military books. I love all historic military stuff, but I mean, you're such a well-developed and just a rounded writer that it's just I don't know how anybody can. Well, I'm sure everybody knows. Well, not everybody knows who you are, but the people in this genre certainly know who you are. Some of your reviews really pop. I've read about five of them tonight, and they just went. I mean, people that read your stuff just love it. Just love your books and love your storytelling abilities, and I will join that group. In fact, I will leave a review for you.
Thank you.
On Amazon.
I appreciate that.
Trust me, my pleasure. But it's I just don't know what got you in to this type of storytelling. This type of storytelling takes a lot of verve, I guess is the word I'm looking for. It takes a lot of practice and. I don't know. I couldn't do it. I could not do it. What got you into it?
Well, I've always liked spec fiction, you know, speculative fiction. So I started out writing sci-fi and fantasy, and I wasn't a horror writer originally. And sci-fi was my first love. And that I was writing back in the 90s, you know, where it was sort of like, you know, you had to catch 22 if you had to be published to get published.
Right.
And
yeah.
So it was very difficult. So I wrote a couple books, finally struck gold with a small press in Oregon in the early noughties, and they published a psychological thriller called Paranoia. And then they published a sci-fi novel of mine called The Great Planet Robbery. They did okay for small press at the time, but nothing spectacular. But I was happy to be published, and, you know, I was just doing my thing. And I kept learning. Every time I wrote a book, I would get better at it, you know, sort of like Malcolm Gladwell's 10,000 hours, right? You get really good at something. Mm-hmm. And they found that with writers, just like with athletes, you develop muscles in your brain, so to speak. You develop these neural pathways where you get better and better and better and better at it, just naturally better at it, because you just keep doing it more and more and more. You know, I'm not as good a writer as I'll be next year, but I'm a better writer than I was last year, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And so, that sort of was my development as a writer. But then how I got into horror was I wrote a zombie novel, and it was called Tooth and Nail. And it was the first zombie novel about military versus zombies. And there were only maybe 40 of us writing zombie books at the time. And I was inspired by an author in England that I ended up becoming friends with, David Moody, who's just a wonderful human being and a great, great writer. And he encouraged me, and I wrote a zombie book because an offshoot of my my sci-fi interest was apocalyptic fiction. Just absolutely couldn't get enough of it. And so from there, I wrote the zombie book. It took off in sales. I wrote a couple more zombie books, and then that. You know, the thing about publishing is when, you know, you got to be published to get published. So once you start having some success, a lot more doors open for you. And I was able to get an agent. The agent got me into Simon & Schuster with Suffer the Children. And then I ended up with my current agent, my current relationship with Hachette, which has been for three books. And they've just been an absolute dream to work with. But whether it's sci-fi or it's horror or it's my, you know, the side stuff I write, the pulpy World War II fiction novels, it's always the same, boils down to the same formula of ordinary people in extraordinary situations.
Sure.
And the more you challenge them with an extraordinary situation, the more you push them, you really find out what they're made of And then, you know, by extension, you really find out what humans are made of, what, and maybe what you're made of as a reader, if you put yourself in the story enough.
Absolutely.
And so that's kind of how I ended up with horror.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to ask you to hold that right there. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back in less than a minute. But right now we're on the air with LA Talk Radio. This is the Writer's Block. We will be right back after the short message from LA Talk Radio.
Hi, Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And you know, these days of coronavirus and COVID-19, as you're sitting home at your desk doing your job, how about instead of watching reruns of Lassie and the Lone Ranger, you tune in to www.latalkradio.com and listen to what our hosts have to say during the day. We've got everything from sports to music to self-help to, well, we even have talk. So why not give us a try during the day, latalkradio.com. And remember, every Thursday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, right here on LA Talk Radio, is the Writer's Block. Have a great day.
And we are back. It is now 19 minutes after 6, and we are on the air with Craig DeLuis and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell. And, Bobby, you need to pull that question out of your jeans pocket that I heard you shove in there a few minutes ago. But if you want to call...
I have so many questions.
Oh, I'm sure. If you want to call and talk to Craig, the number here in the studio is 323-203-0815. And again, that number is 323-203-0815. Okay, Bobby Jean, take it away.
As a reader, this book, to me, it was like eating a 8-course meal. It's so full of meat to be thinking about. It's so much more than a great horror story. I kept wondering when will the horror begin, you know? And then there was a point for me as a reader, and it might be different for different readers, but there was a point when I suddenly, a character, we're back in 2005, the young woman says, you know, "Mom, how long does it take to get to glory?" And the minister, the reverend says, "Welcome aboard the Heaven Express. This is it." Great. And I thought, okay, I'm many, 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 many pages into the book. And I suddenly realized, okay, now we're going to enter this part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
The development of these characters, I learned a whole lot about music from everything you wrote about Deacon. Mm-hmm. I had never heard the term dirty music, but I could understand because you give us so much detail even about the recording process, the performing process. You at one point, there's a comment about poetry and our brain. Is it the right? And I thought, oh my, I almost wanted to stop different times and go online and not to double check what I'm reading, but because I was like, wow, I didn't know that. And you use poetry quite a bit. The poems that are in this book, I'm assuming you have written those poems.
Yes. Well, most of them, yes.
Most of them. I just felt that
There are some used in poetry therapy for Beth, where Dr. Klein is reciting somebody else's poems. But otherwise, they're all original.
How did you? There had to be so much research. Each one of those characters, professionally, what they do, is a big part of the storytelling. You tell the story through these characters. Kind of their professions is a way that they're working out how to deal with what they witnessed. But you give us so much detail. Can you talk a little bit about maybe how you decided on these professions for these characters? And then how did you get into their life?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for your kind words and thanks for reading it. I appreciate everything you said. And the characters, this is a character-driven novel. Like you said, people might say, well, we're making a while for the heart early on. You know, this is really a psychological thriller, or it might be considered psychological horror. A lot of the horror is in the human heart and mind in this book. And then there are cosmic horror elements, and then there's a little bit of cult horror as well. But it's really a story about people and dealing with trauma and the horror that comes from that. And then also the cosmic horror that can be found in this human search for meaning, which is one of the big themes of the book. But because it was a character-driven story, I had to have really good characters. And so I had to develop people who were first going to be children and then adults, and then they were going to have a profession. And so I made a decision early on. I said, well, I know what their wound is. I know why they're traumatized. And that's the big reveal, but late in the book. But what I ended up doing was, with each child, I gave them a dominant personality trait. And then I took them as adults, and I made that dominant personality trait now it's now running amok, and as a coping mechanism. And so if David has a tendency to avoid conflict, now he's like a big avoider. He avoids everything, and he emotionally avoiding. And this is now his flaw, but it's how he gets through the day and deals with what happened to him. And then I gave them a profession that sort of made sense for that dominant personality trait that is now their flaw. So in David's case, he's an avoider. He hides from painful things. And so he helps people escape. He's a cult exit counselor. And so I knew that about David, what his wound was. I knew what his dominant personality trait was. I knew what his flaw was. And then I had to give him a climax, a choice he was going to make at the climax, which is where everything comes together at the end.
Right.
Where there would be some type of closure for him and some type of change from his current flawed state. And so that is the classic hero's journey. I just put my own spin on it to fit this book, to adapt it. And then what I did with the professions is I'm a research hound. So I just studied every single thing I could to give each of these people and their professions. Beth's a psychologist. Deacon is an indie rock singer and songwriter. And David is a cult exit counselor. I did huge amounts of research to make their professions feel thoroughly lived in, that these people live and breathe this stuff. And so if the character told me who these people were, right down to, I take his coffee in the dinner, we take his coffee. Like I didn't have to write a bio or do some Dungeons and Dragons type of character sheet with dice. I knew everything about them just by knowing what their wound was, what their flaw was, and how they needed to change. And what the research gave me and their professions gave me all the tools that they had to understand themselves and to see the world around them and to look at their past. And once all those pieces were in place, I had everything I needed as the writer to create people who sort of live on the page and and in a world that feels really lived in.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you, did the characters that you developed, I mean, you obviously, these came out of your psyche. Did they allow, or did they force you into writing a change of direction for them as the story went?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a writer says that, like, oh yeah, the characters told me what to do, or the story took on a mind of its own and made me, you know, but it's true. It's exactly how it works. If you can take a character, so it's sort of like when you watch you love a TV show and then the writers change it up and you're like, wait a minute, it's the same actors, same faces, but it doesn't feel right. Like, so you can do that with your book. You can force your characters to do what you need them to do for the plot. But if you listen to your characters as a writer and they'll take you where the story needs to go, and the story eventually as well, once it gets legs, it'll take you where it needs to go. And once you hit that sweet spot, you know, I liken writing a novel to climbing a mountain. I mean, you look up and you're like, oh my God, I got to climb this thing. And So you take a step and you take a step and you take a step after you get your base camp, right? You take your steps, look back, and you're like, hey, it's not so bad. I came a long way. Finally, you hit that peak. And once you do, and you're on the downslope, that's that sweet spot. And man, it really does right itself. And at those, when I'm in that zone, I can barely keep up. And it's why I end up having a novel hangover when I'm done writing, because I'm like, wow, it was so good. But I'm done now. I got to do the next one, and I look up at the next mountain, and it's daunting, but that's the life.
We have people that listen to this program and have told us that, I never knew that when you guys write a character that you get so into the character that he starts dictating where he's going to go, because where you told him to go wasn't right for the character. Right. And I find that in all the time when I'm writing. So I know exactly what you're saying. You can let them actually write the book for you if you let them. They will tell their own story.
Well, and they're so rich. Deacon has these different tattoos that are written in, is it Greek, or you give us a translation, Greek and Latin. And I couldn't help but even think about, okay, so Deacon, like, what, okay, you chose those tattoos, you chose not to put them in English. There were so many times when my mind would just, I wouldn't want to read the next sentence because I'm thinking about whatever, you know, you it's so rich. And I am Christian. You take us through the book of Genesis, all kinds of references to Genesis. And there were a lot of times with the religious comments where I would stop right there and think, okay, so what do I? Okay, so let me just think about what I understand already within this context. So for me, that's one reason I was not able to finish the book, because I had to think, you were opening all kinds of doors for me, myself, with these characters, to ask myself questions like they're asking themselves questions. And I don't know that we've had that, Jim, really, and we've read some wonderful horror stories, but I don't think we've ever read anything as meaty as this.
No, would you say? Actually, the most telling thing from Deacon that I got was when he was leaving, going up to the mountain, and he told Lori that she was a member of the band. She's the guitar player.
Yeah.
That if something happens to me, you make sure this album gets made, because it's important.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, so now we know that what Deacon has put down on paper is the story he needed to tell.
Oh, I'm just getting shivers just right now.
and Craig, you were so not even cryptic. You came right out and said it. And I don't know if a lot of people got that, but that's what I got out of that conversation they had when she says, why can't you be a heroin addict like everyone else? Okay. Which is a great line, incidentally. Hey, look, we need to take another real quick break, and we'll be back right after this short word. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block, and we'll be back very quickly right after this short word from Out West.
Are there books on your holiday wish list? Well, maybe you have just added tonight's featured title, The Children of Red Peak. If you are a book fanatic or have people in your list, you should just go to outwestshop.com, choose books and CDs from the toolbar, and then from the drop-down menu, click Shop Out West on bookshop.org. The Writer's Block book list features titles of all of our guests. Click a book cover for the link to our interview and also to purchase. Explore all our book categories. We add new titles daily. In fact, a new list we just added is called Seasonal Celebrations. One-stop shopping supports Out West and independent booksellers when you purchase books through our bookshop.org affiliate website. Remember, it's always a great day out West.
As so it is. It's a great day here in Star, Idaho. I don't know about Albuquerque, New Mexico, but it's a great day here. What about Calgary? Calgary, a good day?
It is. It's a great day here, actually.
Outstanding.
Winter starts sometime in the fall here and doesn't end until the following April or May.
We had
a sunny day today, and it was quite warm.
I love that. Anyway, let's talk about your process a little bit, if you wouldn't mind switching gears, Craig.
Sure, not at all.
We gear this show towards new writers, as we discussed the other night, and they'd love to hear what process you go through as a writer. When do you like to write? What time do you like to write? Where do you like to write? So if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit about that with our audience, we would love it.
Oh, wow. Everybody's going to be mightily bored. I'm the most boring writer in terms of the logistics. When I need total silence. I'm not like Stephen King, who's blasting metal and in the background, and you could just picture how cool that would be. And I want to be that guy, but I'm not that guy. I got my cup of coffee. I'm in my jammies. I work at home, and I get in front of the computer, and I just start writing. And it's in utter silence and with absolutely no distractions because, you know, it's practically ADHD for me. I mean, I'm just so heavily in the zone that I'm dreaming the book. It's what I call it. Another term that sounds kind of maybe overly zen, but it's what it feels like to me. I'm actually dreaming the book as I'm writing it. But probably the most interesting part, I would say just for pure entertainment value to a listener is about how I write is I do a lot of that dreaming before I start writing. And so I'm doing lots and lots of research from the get-go, which is giving me all these little tidbits to work with. I'm slowly sketching through my character arcs and my plot, you know, story structure. And I'm filling notebooks with that stuff. But while I'm doing it, I'm starting to dream the novel, little snatches of dialogue, a scene here, a character trait, just little tiny little epiphanies and wow moments that I make sure I get down. And so that those are always, I'm about to fall asleep, I'm in the shower, I'm driving, I'm always dreaming my books. It's like the process of writing is so much more than just typing. The typing part for me is an absolute bore, you know, to see me do it. But for me, but even though all hell's breaking loose in my brain while I'm doing it. But before that, there's a whole active dreaming process that takes place for some time beforehand.
Huh. Okay. You know, I actually, Bobby knows the story. I actually wrote a book, from a dream. I actually dreamt the book from start to finish. All of it, the entire three parts of the story. I dreamt the entire thing in one night, and I woke up, and it didn't go away. It stayed there. So I thought, this
I wrote
is
a short
cool.
story that way one time. Yeah.
And I sat down, and within like 4 or 5 weeks, I hammered out the first draft of this book called Jonah Blue. And since then, it has gone crazy. It's now on bookshelves and colleges and people love the book. They use it in history classes because of the mountain men stuff in it. But I had never had that happen before. And I wish it would happen again.
Yeah, sometimes when you have a dream, it's not just the idea that pops out of it. But, you know, a lot of times you wake up with a feeling, a really strong feeling from a dream. Right. And that feeling is fiction fodder, you know, for writing.
Sure. Down because I would have to find my glasses to put them on to see what I was doing, so that ain't gonna happen.
Right.
So I'm hoping that
I wasn't talking about actual dreaming. It was when I say active dreaming, it's more like it's almost like it's like a guided meditation where I'm actually kind of drifting through a scene and getting into the feeling of it. Producing the feeling of it rather than carrying it from a dream. I'm actually producing it. And then I'm picturing things and then little things start to roll out almost like a movie in my head where things are happening. I think a lot of writers probably do the same thing. I don't think it's a unique trait for me, but it's something that I rely on heavily.
Oh, well, okay. Then I don't feel so special. No. Are you a pantser?
I think no. I'm a plotter. If you force me to declare, right, I would say plotter. But, you know, plotting for me is not like plotting every single scene, like, a, sure. you know, beats, right? For me, it's more like making sure I have my main plot points, my four plot points for my four acts. And then I have my character arcs that sort of mesh with those plot points. And then the rest is a so that's my plotting. And then the rest is a process of discovery. So a lot of things, you know, so I'm writing to an objective, which is what I've plotted, sure. but everything in between is organic and pantsed, so to speak. And it through the process of what they call discovery.
Oh, okay. We can go along with that. The name of this show is The Writer's Block. Have you ever had writer's block?
It's funny. I gave a talk at When Words Collide, which is a local writing conference. I did that last year, and it was on the neuroscience of reading and writing. And an MD actually wrote a white paper about writer's block and called it a treatable ailment. And came up with all these techniques for how to overcome it. Which I thought was just fascinating, and a lot of it was actually really, really interesting. Yeah, it had a lot of interesting ideas in it. I could share it with you sometime if you like, but for me, not so much. I know where I'm going. You know, for me, it's not so much knowing exactly what's going to happen next. It's more an issue of, motivation. I have to really. And I write a couple of them a year. So, and again, you're looking up at the peak of Everest, and you have to take that first step. And it's sort of like exercise, where, you know, it takes wild horses to get you on the treadmill, but if you just get on the treadmill for a minute, you're fine. So, but it's that getting on the treadmill. It's right. The same thing with writing with me sometimes. So motivation can be an issue with me sometimes. It can be hard to have to get up and go, or not so much that, but just the fire that comes from believing in your story that is going to work, that what you see in your head as a final product can happen, will happen, and will be awesome. And you have to believe sure. in it. And the more I believe in it, the less writer's block I have. But it's not a problem for me.
We'll take that answer, won't we, Bobby?
Yeah. I have a quick question.
Sure.
Do you have some suggestions on how a writer who's maybe a little stymied can increase their imagination?
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
great question.
Well, there are plenty of tools. Yeah, there are plenty of tools. Well, you know, one thing is to read. That's probably the easiest answer. Always be reading if you want to be a writer. Now, I'll say lots of rules, but who cares? You know what I mean? What I think what the rules are, like, every writer is different, and what works for me and may not work for you. But that would be my advice to anybody who's a writer or wants to be a writer is to develop that love of the written word and to read. As you read, you will be inspired. You'll learn craft. So many writers I've read, each of them have taught me something about tone or about style or something about character. Something that I was like, wow, that's what they're really good at that, and I would like to be good at that. I'm now more in tune with it. And I'm going to do some reading about that. I'm going to learn more about that element of craft, mm-hmm. Which is, took me on a long journey where I was a plotter with story points, three acts. And then I went to four acts after doing enough reading and then discovering Larry Brooks' story engineering. And then ended up getting into John Truby's Anatomy of Story, got me into character arcs. And from there, got, you know, went into also, now I'm, my latest thing is I'm really big on theme. I like to study theme and try and incorporate theme as a backbone for the story. And so, you know, you always be innovating and trying new things and always be reading and always be writing. Even if what you're writing, even if you think at the end it may not be that good, it may be actually surprise you that it is good. And even if it's something that isn't publishable, every time you write, you're developing those muscles, you're mm-hmm. forming those pathways, you're getting better at it. Especially for any of the listeners out there who are new writers, never let anybody tell you you're, you know, somebody say to you, well, this is bad or that you're a bad writer or anything
right,
like that.
Right,
that's, or never say it to yourself, because how many of us have picked up a violin and became a great violin player? Nobody. It's the exact same thing with writing. You have to practice.
Right.
And the more you practice, the better you get at it. And that's the advice I would give to people. I'm kind of touching the question on imagination, but I think as far as strengthening your story muscles and mm-hmm. how you look at the world as a writer, I think that what I said is actually good advice, though, like mm-hmm. to always be reading and to be as prolific as you can writing wise, even if you're not 100% feeling strong about what you're writing, just keep at it, because every time you do it, you get better at it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have to take one more quick break, and we'll be back in about 30 seconds with Craig DeLuis. And Craig, this ad actually is from somebody you know. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. And right now, we're going to hear a real brief word about Creative Edge. Hi, Jim Christina from The Writer's Block here with some great big news. If you're an author or inspiring to be one, then you better check this out. Creative Edge, one of Canada's top boutique publicity firms for authors, is now expanding. They are dedicating themselves to promoting authors, indie and traditional, in all walks of life, all genres, and they're looking for all opportunities. Owned by Mickey Mickelson, Creative Edge has the passion, the contacts, and the knowledge to help authors and other artists build their brand and get their work noticed. You can contact Mickey at mickey.creativeedge@gmail.com to get started. Or you can go to www.creative-edge.services. Creative Edge Publicity. It's your brand. It's your future. We, and you should know Mickey, huh?
Yeah, Mickey's a good guy.
We have the same publicist.
He's fantastic.
He is good. And he's mine as well. So look, in the couple minutes
yeah,
we have.
Yeah, very hardworking, and he gets results. So
he just signed a guy, Chris Humphreys, from Anchor. He does a lot of it. So we're looking forward. He's gonna be actually on the show in first of next year. So we're looking forward to having him on with us too. But in the last couple minutes we have left, I hope we haven't bored you. So
no, not at all. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I could talk shop all night.
I'm glad. I told you, we go easy on our authors. And we actually can talk about the book because we actually read it. So there you go, you know. But where can people find you? And I know you have a website, Facebook, all that good stuff. If you wouldn't mind giving us that information.
Oh, sure. I'm on Goodreads. I'm on Amazon. I have pages there. I have, I'm on Facebook. I am on Twitter, but I don't use Twitter as much. I mean, I read it, but I don't tweet as much. I find, wow, social media, it's like its whole thing, isn't it? So I don't engage with Facebook so much professionally as a writer, but as a writer having fun. And just directly engaging with people, other writers and also fans. And so I'm on Facebook. That's where I spend most of my social media time. I also have a website, craigdeluis.com, and people can find out about all my fiction there. There's tons of reviews there and links and synopses. And also I have a blog where I'm constantly exposing myself to, you know, interesting books and movies and TV shows, always looking for the next nugget of inspiration. And so I do lots of reviews there of things I've read and seen and heard. And so if people go to my website, they may, if they like my stuff, they may find something else they like. Or if they don't find, if none of my stuff's their cup of tea, maybe they'll find something else that they do.
There you go. So, and Bobby, I hope people, he just said expose himself.
I know. That's okay. It is a fantastic website. It is a fantastic website.
It's a great website.
You can spend like hours there.
You really can. Interviews and there's so much stuff on that website. Well, Craig, thank you so much for joining us. It was a real pleasure having you with us tonight. And I'm glad
thank
we were
you. It's been a really
enjoyable evening.
Yeah, it's been fantastic. Thank you so much, Jim. And thank you, Bobby Jean.
Oh, it's been our pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. And once again, if you talk to Mickey, say hi. We already talked to him once today. So anyway, say hi for us. And let's your book is, of course, Children of the Red Peak. It came out November 17th this year.
Yeah.
It's starting to gain some real legs. So I'm glad to see that. So it's a great story. If you get a chance, it's available all online booksellers, Amazon, all of them. So go give them a holler. And we can, actually just ask us about it. We'll tell you about the book. Okay. That being said, Bobby, Jean, next week we have a returning guest.
And yes, that we do. Name
is Gary Phillips.
Yeah.
And Gary, of course, is the premier Pulp Fiction writer. The guy is just sort of prolific. He's a great guest. He's a lot of fun to have on the air. And his writing is just like always a lot of fun to read. Because it's so nonsensical and it's just like Pulp Fiction. What are you going to do?
Yeah. So, and we haven't had him on in a while. So that'll be exciting to catch up with him.
Yeah, it'd be good to catch up with him. And
Gary,
and we're going to look forward to talking with him. And of course, we have on our last show this year is the 17th of December, our last live show. That is a Russ night. And I forget who's going to be on that night, but it's going to be, we only have three shows this December. So at any rate, we thank you so much for joining us right here in the Writer's Block in LA Talk Radio. Right. We always appreciate you joining us.
Because Thursday. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because Thursday happens to be Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve.
Yes, it does.
This year.
and, you know, we always appreciate you spending your evening with us, and we do so. So, with that being said, for Bobby Jean, myself, Russ Avison, our occasional co-host, of course, Ronan Rosner in engineering, and our owner, Sam Hassan, we bid you adieu, and we are out of here.